Is this the first trip you made to Petersburg?
I've been here for a long time ago, but also on when I traveled back to D.C., we took the ferry. And so we stopped. We took a leisurely trip back, so with my son and my wife. So we stopped, but we didn't get off. We were able to stop here. So this is the full kind of tour of the community and that I've been on, and it's been great. I've been able to go to see a lot of the facilities, the new facilities, also the old ones. We got the tour of the police station, which is in desperate need of help, to say the least.
Well, that brings me to a question then. Is there any money out there, federal money, do you think, that could help with something like that?
Well, we're not sure. It's something we're going to check on. I know out here, for example, we were able to get some money for the dredging that's going on out here, which will make
for North Harbor,
right?
Yeah.
North Harbor, about $3.4 million. That will help the project here. We were talking to the folks who were raising money for the library. We had about $200,000 that USDA was able to put in that. We did a letter to the USDA talking about that project, and they were successful in receiving about a $200,000 grant, which we think is, again, very exciting to see that new facility. But we're going to check because it makes sense. It's a public facility, and we need to see what we can do to help. But it's impressive to see the community and the investments they are making, you know, in some of the infrastructure. We walked through the new fire station. Unbelievable. I think a perfect facility for the community, and a lot of good equipment in there. And so, again, getting a chance to get a sense of what's here, what's been improved, what some of the gaps are. We still have some more meetings through the day here, and tomorrow we'll meet with some fishermen and hear several things, I'm sure.
I think one of the things you're going to hear from fishermen is concerns over the sea otter population in Southeast Alaska, the growing sea otter population. Is that an issue that you've heard a bit about, and do you see opportunities where Congress or the federal government can do more to, whether it's encouraging native hunting or harvesting or other ways of dealing with the issue?
We've actually talked about this with the federal government folks in regards to how to manage those the issue, and it's hard to explain that actually harvesting them is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing. It helps create some balance back into the oceans. But also, if we work with our native communities, I think there's a great way to take them, those pelts, and utilize them in a commercial way that benefits the native community. So we have recommended some ideas, and we're definitely following this because we know what it's doing to the harvest, especially the shellfish. So we know. We have to manage that down from the level it's at today.
In relation to that, I've heard from.
One more thing I was going to say, but when you try to explain this to folks in Washington D.C., they don't get it. They think, well, we should preserve every type of animal that's in the water, and you try to explain, well, this actually is in balance right now, and the only way you rebalance it is there has to be some harvesting, and that is hard for. Folks back east understand that.
In relation to that, I've heard concerns from native harvesters of sea otters that the regulations or the enforcement of the rules, they what feel it's discouraging to them to being able to do that. Is that something you've been looking at?
Yes, we've actually talked to the Interior Department about this. We've actually sent letters regarding this issue. There is an effort within the Interior Department to review how we describe or how we attach Alaska Native crafts to the utilization of the pelts, because if you can't really harvest them and then utilize the pelts also to resell, then you end up with the Native community not very interested in participating. So we have engaged with this issue. We actually had the Secretary last year, Secretary of Interior, meet with the Alaska Federation Native Board about this issue plus some others, and this one was one that he committed to follow up on, and we're in that process still. Because it's trying to explain this issue to them. It's hard for them to grasp. It really is. I mean, they see them in zoos, they see them in movies, and they say, well, what do you mean you want to harvest them? And you try to explain, well, because there's too many now.
Suzanne, I don't want to keep you if you want to jump in for the question.
I was just going to say, you'd mentioned being on the ferry, and I think there's a lot of concern. And Merriman is here and could help me out, too, with asking questions about the ferry system. There are a lot of concerns regarding services that may, you know, go away or at least be lessened. I was just wondering what your thoughts were.
Well, as the, you know, the ferry system is operated by the state, but we do have a role, and we just passed, the Senate did, the transportation bill, which we had five priorities in there. One of those priorities was changing the way the ferry system is treated in the transportation bill. So it's not just an extra add-on that's actually part of the transportation, that's actually, in this case, a road on the water. We teamed up with folks from Washington State and some folks from the East Coast. We got language in there now. The bill is in conference. So the House has a version. We have a version. They're now trying to meld the two versions into a final bill, which will be due by the end of this month to end of June. That will help stabilize the funding for the ferry system, at least from the federal government side. Now, the state has a huge role in this, but this is the thing we wanted to do, was not have the ferry system, when you talk transportation, as a secondary thought, but actually a more stabilized funding source. And so in this case, we've been able to do that in the transportation bill on the Senate side. So by the end of June, hopefully we'll pass this bill. We've talked to the state DOT about this. They really appreciate the language we've been able to work into this bill, because it will give them more certainty and more stability in the funding from the federal government. But we're just a piece of it. There's a lot more from the state, but we think if we can solve that, it gives them at least some avenue to work from.
What's the setup? Oh, sorry.
I'll tell you, we took it, like I said, we drove in August in 2009. It took us 19 days to get to D.C. Mm-hmm. It was a nice, slow, leisurely. We took our time, but we made sure we took the ferry. My son had never been on the ferry. He was 9 and a half. At that point, he was 6 and a half. And we took him on the ferry, and it was a great experience for him. Okay. And we're very happy that there are new ferries being constructed. Mm-hmm. Let me just say that. The movie room was a little tight. I can't remember which one we were on, but it was a little tight. But knowing that there's this new series of Alaska class being built, and being built, you know, just around the corner in essence, Ketchikan, in Alaska labor, Alaska equipment, Alaska business, I think is a good thing.
Secure rural schools, looking at the one-year extension at this point, do you expect that to go through soon, or what about the long-term, I guess?
Yeah, it's attached to the transportation bill, so if the transportation bill passes out at the end of June, this will be part of it. The challenge is, it passed by a pretty large margin, that amendment. The challenge is, it is a rider on the transportation bill. Sometimes they take those riders out after they do the compromise, but we feel like there's a lot of support, so we're feeling pretty good that it could stay in there. Then we have a longer-term plan that's been agreed upon, which extends it out 5 years with a 5% reduction over 5 years and then stops after 25% reduction.
That's a Treasury-funded program, right?
Correct.
It wouldn't be resource-based.
Correct, because it's changed, right. And that is a compromise from where some people wanted it, which was to eliminate the whole program. And so we feel that the states that were most affected by this came up with a solution. But right now, this next year will be fully funded if the rider passes, and then we'll continue to work on that compromise. A lot of good support around it. People understand the value of it, especially for small communities as we're in here today. But I think there's a high interest on it.
Yeah, Sea Alaska Lands Bill, that was supposed to be marked up sometime soon. Obviously, for people on all sides of that issue, or what's the status right now and what's next with it?
Well, you know, there's a couple things. There's a Sea Alaska Lands Bill, then there's also the mental health lands issues, too, that's moving around. But the Sea Alaska one, they were just, matter of fact, in my office in D.C. this last week. They have just had another meeting with the folks at, with the administration. I don't think they got to a final decision at this point of the compromise. The issues are sacred sites and future sites, they call them. Future for economic development, sacred sites, which are traditional sites. It looks like on the bulk of the lands, there's pretty much agreement on where those would be. There's some pieces that still need to be worked out. But right now in Congress, the challenge is it's in the big picture of the issues we're dealing with, you know, the budget, the deficit, the defense funding issues that we were working on this last week, the tax reform, it's a small issue in this big picture, trying to get other members to see this as an important issue. So what we're trying to do is craft a larger lands bill that touches lots of different states, and having this a piece of the equation. The challenge is we can't. It's the bill, which is primary sponsor on it, Senator Murkowski, is working this and trying to figure out where the compromise is. The problem is you do have two ends of this that some people don't want anything done, and some people who want to even go further. So it's been very difficult to get to a compromise on this at this point.
You mentioned the mental health trust lands. I'm understanding that was going through the administrative process as opposed to congressional, but are you involved in that then as far as the Petersburg trade and the other trades for the lands?
Correct. They meet with us fairly regularly because the work we do with the administration and trying to move legislation that or regulation that may not have to go through our legislative process, we get lots of requests from different organizations throughout the state that will come to us and talk to us about regulatory process, or in this case, administration process, and how to assist them in getting it through. And in this case, mental health met with us probably about 10 days ago and gave us the latest lay of the land. There's a couple things that I think they'll need some assistance on to kind of close it all up. But, you know, they prefer to do it administratively. There may be some pieces that may require legislation. We're, of course, recommending that they continue the path they're doing because it looks like they're getting all the compromises done the right way. They're getting buy-in from the stakeholders, and there's probably some pieces that may be a little more difficult. But at this point, it is administratively, but they meet with us fairly regularly on this.
Do you support an exchange then? I know you've been in correspondence with the homeowners on Metcalf Highway.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's pieces that I'm still not clear on how it will work out, but generally – I think mental health has some lands that I think are high value for habitat preservation, but also the federal government is very interested in. But we also recognize that mental health also wants to develop lands. So we want to make sure there's a careful balance here, that this is not land that just put in their hands that they can just go develop and have a negative impact to some of the communities. But we've given them advice from day one when I came in the office that how they have to work this is they're going to spend a lot of time in the communities. They can't just say, here's the land we want, here's the land we want to trade, but they're going to have to spend a lot of time figuring out the nuances of all the pieces.
Have you been pretty familiarized with the public safety concerns of the homeowners along the highway here in terms of why they want to have the land exchange as far as landslide concerns, that
yes,
sort of thing?
Yes, yeah. And, I mean, that's one piece. And there is some land that the federal government wants for habitat preservation. And so there's all these little pieces. And the good thing about, honestly, about the mental health lands trades piece, it's a small trade compared to the Sea Alaska, which is pretty significant. And I think they recognize that they have to figure out, as you mentioned, on the landslide or the area along the road, that they have to be part of this to solve this problem. And they see, you know, honestly, how they can leverage all these pieces around, and we're trying to make sure it works right.
Also about redistricting, what are your thoughts on how that? I see you laugh there. I'm sure you've heard an earful about that from local folks here, but there's a lot of folks not happy with it in Petersburg. But what's your impression of redistricting? What do you think it's going to mean for your party as well as just generally for the region? I mean, for the state.
Yeah, I think first it was interesting. We had a lunch with folks and several elected officials. And we were trying to figure out which plan had which ask. It was almost like who's on first, because when I say, well, isn't that now combined? I said, well, no, actually, that's the other plan. They said, well, which plan was the one that they just did? And I said, well, I think now we're with Juneau. But then I said, well, what about this legislature? Well, I'm not sure who they're running against. So I think that the challenge of this is, and I can't speak to the details of the plan, only to say that there is a change that's occurring in small communities, rural Alaska, up in the western region of Alaska, that there's just smaller populations, and it's changing the dynamics. What I don't, what I'm fearful of, is if rural communities, and I mean from western Alaska or southeast or the Aleutians, start losing representation, that we don't get into this kind of parochial division of how to divide resources up in the sense of the legislature. Because at the end of the day, to be very frank with you, what we were talking about this last night when I was in Ketchikan, and they were talking about their new harbor or their new shipyard that's being developed, and a Portland company has just bought it, Vigor, and they're going to invest a lot of money in that port and in that shipyard. And that's going to be great for all of Southeast, but actually it's going to be great for all of Alaska. But some people might see that just as a Southeast issue. My view is that's an Alaskan issue, because now you'll have ships that don't have to go down to Seattle to get refurbished. They can come right down here to Southeast and get refurbished. That's a good thing for Alaska. So I'm hopeful the redistricting doesn't get into the arguments of, well, now they have less representation, so they will get less, whoever they will be, Southeast or Western Alaska or Aleutians. The other part, you know, how it all ends up at the end of the day with Democrats or Republicans, I think the Senate has shown, the state legislature here, the Senate, has shown how Democrats, Republicans working together can actually solve a lot of things. And I think that coalition has endured a lot of politics, and the net result is I think they look at the broader picture. I know when I called Bert Stedman on an issue that was a small issue, but it is now going to become a big issue, is the issue of unmanned aircraft. This is the future development. Alaska can become one of the sites in the country for this.
I think the university got a permit to use it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, what happened was we came up, I spoke to the legislature and said this should be something we should do as a state. Fairbanks is really moving forward on this, so I asked the legislature to put $5 million toward this. And it was people like Bert Stedman and
Senator Stedman, Senator Ellis,
Bill Stoltz, House member from Eagle River, said this was a good idea. Lyman Hoffman, I mean, that was a mixture. Even though it was a Fairbanks University kind of starting point, but what they saw was Kodiak Launch Site might take advantage of this. Other people might take advantage of it, and it made sense from an Alaska perspective. And I think, you know, again, looking at the coalition in the Senate, they've done a great job in making these things happen, not focused on just, you know, Senator Stedman could have said, well, how does it benefit Southeast? When I explained it was an Alaska project, he saw the value of it. And I think that's – so I'm hoping redistricting doesn't divide people up into deeper and deeper into these regional camps. When everything we're doing in the state – it doesn't matter where you are, is going to benefit some section of the state.
Yeah, we can wrap it up. That's fine. And actually, Suzanne, if you want to ask a rapid question.
Yeah. I had a couple of ideas right off the top of my head. I've been spending a lot of time up at high school lately. Kids are graduating.
Yes.
What advice would you have to kids graduating from high school right now and heading off to, you know, universities or colleges? And what advice do you have for kids heading into higher education as a first-timer?
Well, be prepared, you know, and be prepared for a big expensive bill afterwards. But I think for Alaska, we have huge opportunities, I think, for our young people. I mean, you think about Southeast. 5 years ago, we could not talk about the mining industry as it is now. I mean, these are jobs that will pay $80,000 plus. And it's a growing part of our economy. What's going to happen in the Arctic is going to be unbelievable, not just oil and gas, but the research, the fisheries potential up there, the mineral extraction, the visitor capacity, the shipping. All that is unbelievable potential for Alaska. So as these young people go off to higher education, maybe two-year, four-year vocational education, career education, there are a lot of new opportunities opening up in Alaska. Think about this also, the fishing industry, which we can claim as this most sustainable fisheries in the country.
But there's also the grain of the fleet right now. I've heard that as a kind of a buzz term.
There is definitely the grain of the fleet, but there's two pieces that are happening. You know, for example, in this area, a lot of the fleet is here. There's other fleet that's in Seattle, but actually is owned by Alaskans now. That fleet's coming here, and it's going to be positioned in Southeast and in South Central. Those areas are going to position these couple hundred ships. Well, that means all that's going to come here for more economic opportunity. Instead of being in Seattle, Tacoma, it's going to be here. I think when you look at, we were talking about the Coast Guard today, and the concern as well as the Arctic opens up was, does that mean less Coast Guard here? Actually, it means more Coast Guard, keeping what we have here and building additional resources up in the north region. But I think for young people, Alaska has a huge opportunity that is, I mean, we were just talking about that here. I was lucky enough Wednesday at 8 a.m. in the morning, someone knocked on my door and brought me Petersburg King Salmon Ocean Cod that they did on Monday. They knocked on my door, delivered it. I had it that evening. Unbelievable. But we have, you know, in the few days before that, the Copper River opened up, and you saw, I mean, national news opens up, and I had a couple jars someone brought me, and of course, it's high value with my senator colleagues, and they're all trying to figure out how to get a piece of it. But we have huge opportunities here. But the challenge we have is around the educational fields. We have to think about this. A kindergartner today By the time we develop the Arctic in the sense of oil and gas development, when we're ready to develop it, they will be seniors. Mm-hmm. But we're not preparing for that. Southeast University has a mining program which gives high school kids college credit to do that. But we have limited seats available. But an example A I'll use in Interior, Donlin Creek will require 1,000 miners for 27-plus years, making $80,000 to $120,000 a year. We don't have enough to fill these jobs. And they're good, and they're high-tech. They're a variety of jobs, just in the mining industry alone. As the fisheries continue to grow and we move that fleet north from Seattle, all the secondary business that goes along with that will mean we need new entrepreneurs, new businesses, people working in those fields. And that's all happening. It's not a question of these might happen. No, it's actually happening. Mm-hmm. But we as a state, I don't think, are preparing our educational system for this transition that's occurring right now. And that makes me very nervous. I talked to the legislature about this in my joint session when I spoke to them. We have legislation on a federal level to put more resources in the STEM education, science, technology, engineering, math, into career education. But the state is the biggest funder of education in our state, mm-hmm. and we need to have a much greater focus in that. When Southeast completes its hydro systems here and its intertie, which it will at some point, it will be done where everything will be linked. Well, people will have to maintain these facilities, and they're not, $8, $9 an hour jobs. These are highly technical jobs that Alaskans should be operating. But we're not preparing young people for this. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, when I went out to rural Alaska, out in western Alaska, and they have now windmill operations for energy, the employees that predominantly work in those are from out of state. They're shipped in to maintain them for a couple of weeks, and they leave. But yet, it's a perfect kind of training because you don't need a full-time person. You need a part-time person. Mm-hmm. So you can actually meld it with a subsistence lifestyle and a part-time worker, have a cash economy for part of their life and the other half in their subsistence. But we're not training people for this. Mm. That's the challenge that we have that's in front of us that we have to push much further than we are today, to be very frank. And I'm nervous about it because we have an incredible capacity with our young people. But if they keep leaving, mm-hmm. when they leave, they don't come back all the time.
Right. Do you think that Alaska has a marketing problem to its own residents?
No, we have a higher percentage now going. I mean, I served on the Post-Secondary Education Commission mm-hmm. here as its chair for 7 years and the mm-hmm. Student Loan Corporation for 7 years. We have a higher percentage going to our universities now than ever before. The challenge is making sure we match what they're getting in that educational arena to what is now growing and what's going to be there 20 years out from now. Mm-hmm. And when you think of just, put aside again, oil and gas and all that, just the scientific research and activity in the Arctic will be enormous. Why are we not preparing ourselves to be the leader in developing young people in this technology and understanding of the Arctic? Mm-hmm. We should be the ones that, say, where do these scientists come from? They come from Alaska, mm-hmm. not from the lower 48 that then transplant here
right. To
do it. I had this photo of this woman brought me, and it was one of the mines in Fairbanks Interior. She showed me this photo, great photo, 9 people, 2 were Alaskans. Mm-hmm. That's it. And again, geologists, scientists, some were running computer equipment, all jobs that we could fill. Mm-hmm. But I think there's sometimes the capacity. I was at the nursing program in Anchorage recently, full up, waiting list to get in. And the private sector, mm-hmm. waiting list for nurses. Mm-hmm. Providence has a $10,000 bounty on you bring us a nurse. If you're working for Providence, we'll pay you to bring them to us. We keep them for a period of time. We know there's gaps, so we just got to link it and get out of this kind of parochial, well, it's good for my district only, I'm only going to focus on my district. Mm-hmm. You train more nurses, I don't care if you train them in Anchorage or you train them in Petersburg, you train them in Fairbanks, they will be used in Alaska. Mm-hmm. That's just no question about it. But if you say, well, we're just going to train them in Anchorage, and people in the Southeast say, well, that's just an Anchorage issue, or Fairbanks says, that's an Anchorage, no. Train them. They live in Anchorage. They live in Alaska. They will stay in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to rethink. When the Juno is doing their Southeast program in regards to mining, whatever they produce here is going to work in the mining industry in Southeast, in Interior, wherever the mines are. But there'll be Alaskans who are already familiar with living in our conditions.
So. Yeah, I know from covering the medical center board.
So you know the shortages they have?
Yeah, and they're always talking about grow your own. But I think, too, maybe some kids get scared that, oh, well, if I train here, I get stuck here. But then the medical center here relies heavily on locums, visitors.
That's right, visitors.
Traveling, and people make that a lifestyle, and they just travel.
They travel from place to place.
And it's a lifestyle for them. So.
Right. It's actually the whole idea. It sounds so simple when we say it, you know, grow our own, they'll be
mm-hmm.
our own.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have an Alaskan that is trained, pick the field, and they can work in that field, they're already familiar with Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to get them familiar with the conditions. You don't have to get them familiar with it rains 1 hour, then it's sunny the next, and oh, by the way, sleet might happen in another hour, you know? And I think that is the challenge that we have. But I think we used to be a lot more bold in the state. You know, I was born and raised here. We used to think bigger, bolder. But now we're kind of like, oh, should we do that? Should we not? All these things I've mentioned to you are happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a question of if it's going to happen. It's happening. So we should invest and do it and just get on with the show. But I think people are cautious about that, or they're back to the old days. Well, we'll just spread the money all around and hope it all works. It's never enough to do anything. It's just enough to make people happy. And really what you should do is say, okay, what do we want to be 20 years from now? Do we want to be a place that people come from all over the world to understand Arctic science? I think so. Should we be the facilities that do that? Should we continue to be the sustainable fishing capital of the world? Yes. So what does that take to make that happen? What do we need to understand that we're going to have an enormous amount of mineral development throughout our state? What does it take to make that happen? But instead, we're almost shy or afraid that, now we can we really be?